The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And welcome to everyone here this morning for kind of a snowy February 6th out there. Snow is just starting to ramp up a little bit. We'll see how much we get today. It sounds like it's going to be a fast mover. We're going to get a lot of the snow early today, but then I'm hearing also some more, maybe a little bit of ice and a little bit of freezing rain mixed in there. That's always the dangerous stuff, so keep an eye out for that and watch your commute going in. It's not too bad right now. Maybe the commute going out might be a little worse today. We'll see how that goes. We have a great guest for you this morning. Jonathan Butler is our guest, president and CEO of One Berkshire. We're going to be talking about everything that One Berkshire does in the community, talking about economic development and tariffs and tourism, all kinds of good stuff, what's coming up in the upcoming year, 2025, here for the Berkshires. Lots of good stuff to talk about with Jonathan, so we'll be doing that in just a moment. First, let's get our look at the weather forecast from the National Weather Service and see what we do have coming for us today. Here we go. Berkshire
weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect until 6 p.m. EST this evening. Today, snow with a slight chance of sleet this morning, then snow with sleet, freezing rain and freezing drizzle likely this afternoon. Snow may be heavy at times this morning. Total snow accumulation of 2 to 4 inches. Ice accumulation around a trace. Not as cold with highs in the lower 30s. Southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation near 100%. Wind chill values as low as 0 this morning. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A chance of freezing rain in the evening. Not as cold with lows in the lower 20s. Southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming west 15 to 20 miles per hour after midnight. Gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, it's a little complicated forecast there for sure, but, you know, some stuff coming through. I guess that's what we can say about that today. So keep an eye out for the weather. Drive safely out there, everybody, if you're listening to this. And if you happen to have a work-from-home day, kick back, relax, and enjoy a little bit, and then get back to work. Okay, welcome to the show here. We have Jonathan Butler on Zoom for the today. And how are you, Jonathan? Thanks for joining us today.
I'm doing well, Sean. Thanks for the opportunity to come on and chat this morning.
Absolutely. Glad you could make it. And, you know, that's one of the things we learned from the pandemic. We find ways of making stuff work one way or the other. That's usually the best way to do it. You know, we always find a way. I feel like that's our motto for the Berkshires as well. We just find a way to get stuff done and to make stuff work.
We just figure stuff out. Yeah. So we can move forward.
I agree. So give us a little bit for those of you listeners out there uninitiated with what One Berkshire is and does. Give us a kind of an overview of the organization and all the things that you're involved with here in the Berkshires and Pittsfield and in the rest of the county.
Sure. I'm happy to do that, Sean. So for those of you listeners out there that aren't familiar with our organization, One Berkshire is a countywide regional nonprofit where we kind of have positioned ourselves over the years as the lead economic development and business organization for the region. We have about 750 member businesses from throughout the Berkshires, really kind of covering all the different parts of the Berkshires. In terms of the work that we do, we do a lot of those traditional business support programming and resources that you'd see from a chamber of commerce. Mm-hmm. So we very much are aligned, structured like a chamber of commerce, but we have some additional hats that we wear. One of them that everybody will be familiar with is doing some direct marketing for the Berkshires. So we play a big role in coordinating with our cultural institutions and our tourism destinations on talking about the Berkshires, communicating to audiences outside the region and getting people here to spend money, support our community and support our businesses. And then additionally, we do a lot of economic development work. We have an economic development division of our organization, which works with businesses, recruits businesses, and puts a lot of time and effort into coordinating support and helping the region with a lot of the wraparound issues that we all wrestle with. So things like workforce issues, housing, transportation, broadband, any of those things that kind of affect us all in some way. We do the work that we can to try to make the ecosystem here in the Berkshires healthier. And that's pretty much what we're up to in Pittsfield, which is where our headquarters is located.
Yeah. And, that economic development piece is really key. And it's something that, for a lot of people flies under the radar, if you will. They don't think about economic development in their daily lives. They're thinking about their families, their kids, their job, what it is they have to do, mowing the lawn. I mean, whatever it is people have to do, what vacation they're going to go on. And yet, underlying all of that somehow is having the economy to support families and jobs and keep people employed here in the Berkshires, right?
Exactly. And economic development's a broad term. You hear it thrown around a lot, in business settings, in professional settings, in public settings. And, it's one of those terms where if you were to ask 10 people, what does economic development mean? You might get 10 different definitions or responses or understandings of what it might mean. But really, for our organization, what we try to focus on is what are the conditions that we need for business and commerce to happen here, mm-hmm. and to be healthy and to be supported, right? We want businesses to have access to the consumer base that they need. We want businesses to have the resources around them that you need to be healthy. So obviously that means affordable cost of living for their workforce, quality, desirable housing, access to transportation that's needed, and access to different technologies and social and experiential things that everybody needs to enjoy living and working in an area. Those are just as important to the health of a business as a business's ability to be profitable. So all those different conditions that affect everyday life in the Berkshires, we engage in a lot of dialogue and work with regional partners on those things on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it seems like some of those items you listed, are very strong suits, if you will, for the Berkshires, especially, a great place to live, good connection, social, recreational, all that kind of stuff. There are other things about the Berkshires that we have as disadvantages, let's say, as compared to other parts of the state, maybe the larger populations in the more urbanized areas that have the larger corporations and have a deeper workforce and a deeper employment situation, right? I mean, are those things that we struggle with here in the Berkshires?
They are on some level, with all those different factors that you just mentioned, Sean. We're very similar to rural regions around the country and around the Commonwealth, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not so much different from other regions that have similar population sets as ourselves. We have a large geography and only about 130,000 residents that live here full time. And really only two cities all throughout the Berkshires with, and North Adams is a small city. So, right. we don't have those big economic centers that you see scattered all throughout Eastern Mass and other parts of New York and New England. But we like to think that we're small but mighty, right? We have some things that we do that we do well here. And when you look at the Berkshires and what our assets are, whether you're talking to businesses about why they'd want to be here or you're talking to people about why they'd want to stay here or live here, it's the quality of life, right? Like we live in such a beautiful place that can't be taken from us. And that is our asset. I think sometimes for those of us that, we're born and raised here like myself and grew up here, we lose sight of that a little bit contextually. But when you travel around, New England and New York and other parts of the Northeast and, regions that we compete with in a professional sense, there's not a lot of places that have the balance of work and life that the Berkshires does. So we try to focus on that and build off of it.
Yeah. And that would be, I would think, a pretty good attraction for bringing business to the county in a lot of ways, right? And especially, I'm sure that we learned a few things more than just using Zoom during the pandemic, where, you know, we were attracting a good number of people who wanted to, you know, live full time. They sort of saw what was here and said, well, I can work remotely. I can live and do this here and still have my employment. You know, there was a real trend toward that. Did any of that sort of rub off post pandemic? Were we able to keep some of that population here? And were we able to attract some new businesses to the area that maybe hadn't thought about establishing themselves in the Berkshires?
The short answer to that is yes. You know, we definitely were an area that the trends of the pandemic, which were kind of, you know, exporting people out of urban centers into rural areas, right? People wanted space. They wanted to get out of the hustle and bustle of cities during that stretch of 2 years. And we definitely benefited in terms of, you know, there was an increase in interest in relocating to the Berkshires, you know, whether that be permanently or part time or with second homeowners. You know, there's pros and cons to that, but ultimately, you know, we saw a desire for people showing a desire to want to be in the Berkshires, which is a good thing. Yeah. And we still have the remnants of that post pandemic. We definitely are probably in the plus category population wise since 2020. But, you know, there's reasons for that, right? In the, you mentioned Zoom, Zoom's one of them, right? Yeah. Like we have what's helped more rural settings in terms of competing with more urban settings business wise is, you know, workforce now can, you know, you can work in the Berkshires and be, you know, calling into an employer in Boston or New York, you know, and then maybe 1 or 2 days a week, you're making a commute to some in-person stuff, but it's provided people flexibility where you have a lot more personal choice over where you want to live, where you want to make your home and bring your family. So that's a positive for the Berkshires. And that's an opportunity that we have to continue to invest in and grow here, because that really might be our future economically. When we talk about, you know, what the average employee is doing in the region, you know, maybe 10 years or 20 years down the road. But there's a lot of work that's connected to that. You know, our housing market was impacted by all this, and we have to figure that out. You know, demand for things like transportation continues to persist, and you know, we haven't really found any huge silver bullet solutions there. And there's a whole bunch of other issues. You know, the demographics of our workforce is changing as well. So we do have an opportunity, and I think the business community is keen on understanding that. But we have work to do in order to really capitalize on it.
Yeah, so let's break down each one of those things, because each one of those presents its own challenges, right, to our area. And we're not unique, but we do have some different challenges maybe than some of the other areas of the state or the region. Housing, you got to talk about that right away. And that's such a major issue. We might as well add the word crisis to the end of it, because there is a lot of difficulty right now on all ends of the spectrum with regards to housing, and also the cost of housing, right? The availability and the cost are both big issues right now. What's going on in our region to try and address those things?
Sure. Very, very hot topic. You know, I hate the use of the term crisis, but it's not fair to not refer to it as a crisis, because there's populations within our region that it's reached a crisis state. And that's mirrored in other parts of Massachusetts as well. This is a statewide issue, even a national issue on some levels. However, we have our own flavor of it here in the Berkshires. The major pressure on the housing market in the Berkshires really started before the pandemic, and then was really hyper escalated because of the pandemic. You know, that demand to want to come here and be here, and people to own real estate here, really it inflated the housing market in a way that made it far less accessible for a lot of our residents to be able to purchase a first home or grow out of a first home into a larger home and start a family. The supply and demand for that is very much out of whack right now in the buyer's market. And then the other side of it is the rental market in the Berkshires. So we have an issue there, and it affects multiple demographics within the Berkshires. So we have a lack of quality, desirable, affordable housing in the Berkshires, right? And when we say affordable housing, we're talking about, you know, where our workforce lives. You know, our school teachers and our entry-level employees at Berkshire Health Systems or General Dynamics and our key employers. You know, people that are just getting their career started. We have a big lack of affordable housing and desirable affordable housing that's been properly maintained and provides what people want. And then also market rate housing, right? Which is, you know, housing sometimes closer in proximity to downtowns, you know, for mid-career folks or young professionals recruited into the region. or even empty nesters that are ready to, you know, leave their 3 or 4 bedroom home because their kids are out of the house and settle into something, you know, desirable to live in, you know, in their retirement years. So we have a supply and demand issue in the region with all of those different components of housing. And it creates a lot of downward pressure on the housing market. And that's where we see a lack of quality housing options, which lead to things like housing insecurity and even homelessness in some areas. So
do you
those things are all interconnected.
Yeah. Do you see it as an issue where the conditions were such that people didn't want to leave their existing homes? Like, in other words, you had a good mortgage, right? Maybe during the pandemic or even previous to that. That was, you know, pretty low, and then inflation spikes up and suddenly you can't get a good rate mortgage. So you say, well, we're just going to stay here. And then the other problem, of course, being that there aren't a lot of new homes being built. And you know, even though there are some efforts to that, and we can talk about that. Are those both conditions that led us to where we are right now?
Yeah, I think you hit that nail right on the head, Sean. Those two major points are exactly where I think the real crisis comes to be fed. You know, obviously we had inflation of housing, the supply and demand gave us inflation in the real estate market, right? So, you know, you look to 2018, 2019, and then draw forward to 2025, we've seen in the ballpark of anywhere from 50% to 125% increase in the value of real estate throughout the region, right? Yeah. It's community to community, it differs a little, but even in a community like Adams, where I live and where I'm taking this call from, you know, has always been a working class community with a good quality housing stock and has been approachable and affordable for people. We've seen about an 80% increase in the average home sale value over the last 4 years. And that's mirrored elsewhere. So that's part of the issue. You know, people that were saving for a down payment, you know, 3 or 4 years ago to buy a first home are now in need of, you know, maybe double that amount of an initial down payment from what they had been planning for years.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it's the interest rates, right? The interest rates affect us in a few ways. You know, one is if you're a first-time home buyer, you're dealing with that inflation of cost, but also this additional interest rate burden that sticks with you for years and, you know, can add tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to a home purchase. And then the other side of it is for folks that might be, you know, good candidates to sell their home and move out of their home. Moving into the next home, they're affected by the interest rate. So they're kind of stuck, right? There's an opportunity to potentially have an economic benefit from, you know, selling a home that's increased in value. But if you're just going to have to reinvest that directly into your next home because of the increase in interest rates, it makes for a difficult spot for folks.
Yeah. And I think the valuations have really gotten people, you know, I think that's one of the things I hear about the most when people talk about, well, you know, my taxes keep going up because the value of my house goes way up. But what am I going to do with that? All I have to do is just pay, you know, 15, 20% more a year in my taxes. And over the course of, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, the value of the house doubles. That's out of your control. There's not much you can do about it. You just have to keep paying it, right?
Yeah, and you know, there should be some relief of that on the other side of it, right? So if the assessed value of communities is increasing, the tax rate should be able to go down, right? And that's a formula. So there should be some relief, but we're not seeing that everywhere, right? And there's a whole bunch of things contributing to that. You know, rise in education costs, you know, rise in infrastructure costs and needs within communities. You know, as we're continuing to, you know, see inconsistencies in state and federal funding in a lot of areas that trickles down in municipalities and that's where your tax bill is coming from.
Yeah.
So there's those things are all interconnected and there's a lot to it, but it's one of those areas where, you know, we really need all three levels of government, local, state, and federal, to do a better job in coordination to provide that relief to homeowners and the residents in our community.
Right. I would think economically there's nothing worse than inflation because it hits everyone one way or the other. And then everything that you pay for, all the things you pay for, if you're paying for your taxes, your government is also experiencing that level of inflation and has to pass those costs along to you or reduce services, which neither one of those two things are exactly popular, right? It sounds great to reduce services until you actually do. And then you get a lot of complaints about what you are not doing anymore. So it's definitely a catch 22 in a lot of ways. We're talking with Jonathan Butler this morning. He's the president and CEO of One Berkshire. I'm talking about economic development right now. And another component of economic development, especially here in this area, Jonathan, would be transportation. And maybe you can speak a little bit to that because, again, Transportation in the Berkshires, always going to be a different thing than transportation in Boston, transportation in New York City, even transportation in Albany, for that matter. It's just going to be a different animal, right? We're fighting for things like, East-West Rail and the Berkshire Flyer and things like that. There are, bike paths. There are new road construction that is going to help with the flow of traffic and things like that. What are some of the most important things you see coming down the pike, no pun intended there, to help transportation in this area?
The exciting issue is East-West Rail, or West-East Rail, as our delegation likes to refer to it, just cause to put the West first, which I like. Mm-hmm. But that's we refer to that as a generational project, right? Which, you hear that and immediately it's like, yawn, that's going to take forever. But it's the kind of project that can transform the Berkshires for the next century, right? If you connect Boston to Worcester to Springfield to Pittsfield with higher speed rail, where people can, they can board a train in Pittsfield at 7 o'clock in the morning, work on their laptop for 3 hours, and then they arrive at North Station in Boston or South Station in Boston at, 10 in the morning. That's a game changer for the way our economy in Massachusetts works. Hmm. That almost lights up the Berkshires as a place to live and have access to whatever economic or professional path that you're on. Not to mention, the experiential side of it, of just making it easier to move around the Commonwealth for those of us that live here full time.
Right.
But that's really been the issue that has severed the Berkshires in a lot of ways from, the other economic centers of Massachusetts. And it's unfortunate, right? Mm-hmm. Generationally, you go back, we relied on the train and it connected everything. We had beautiful train stations in North Adams and
Absolutely.
Pittsfield that went north, south, east, west. And it was a way of life. It connected people. It connected commerce. It connected the way that we think about ourselves as a state. And that's been lost in the last 50 to 60 years. And as we talk about things like, not to go too far down things, but we talk about climate change and changing patterns in this country, like rail is a solution to a lot of those problems. And for us in the Berkshires, it starts with just connect us to our state capital in Boston, and then connect us to the state capital in New York, in Albany.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, a lot of the economic challenges we talk about become smaller.
Well, it feels like it would be a great tool to have in the toolbox, right? It can't be the one thing you rely on, but neither should automobiles, right? And it seems like what happened in the 50s and 60s as rail, as you mentioned, was sort of like the backbone of everything. That's how people got everywhere. And the rise of the automobile, I mean, that's a macro issue, right? That's a bigger thing than anything. But it also kind of coincided with the whole urban renewal concept of wiping out the old and bringing in the new. And that's when we lost those great old train stations, Union Station here in Pittsfield and the train station in North Adams and other places. Sort of completely wholesale abandoned everything old for what seemed to be new, but it wasn't necessarily the best move in the world. So now it seems like the irony is now we're trying to recreate some of that infrastructure that we had built in, and was working pretty well.
Yeah. And as you said, it's West-East Rail is not the sole solution, but it's one of the key pieces in a future toolbox, right? Mm-hmm. And you could probably put the Northern Corridor Rail project that would run along the Route 2 through a lot of those former gateway cities and post-industrial communities up there as another resource in that toolbox. But, it makes sense on so many levels. The problem is that the political representation in Western Mass is much smaller than in Eastern Mass, right? So the fight for the dollars for these generational types of investments is hard work, and it takes a long time. We are making headway on that, though, and we have good leadership on the public side. But if you look at the key things in the Massachusetts that we're wrestling with, they have huge issues with overpopulation density and traffic in Eastern Mass, right? Yet that they keep growing economically in Eastern Mass. Look at the seaport in Boston. Isn't the natural, simplest solution to create infrastructure that allows people to sprawl, and live further away from those economic hubs, but be able to equally access them and easily access them? So we're trying to frame this argument around West-East Rail as it's not just about connecting the Berkshires. It's about making Massachusetts a more livable place for everyone.
Yeah. And it just seems like sometimes there's that mental block from the folks that have the Eastern perspective, if you will. We know that there's a lot of people that don't even really, the Berkshires is out there somewhere. They can't really place it on a map. They think that Western Mass ends somewhere in the Pioneer Valley, and you know, it's just a different mental place to be. And our legislative body here in the Berkshires, our delegation, I think reminds them frequently about that and said, you know, hey, we're still here. You got to be a little louder when you're smaller, I guess. And they do a pretty good job of that. I know Smitty Pignatelli, for example, was a big champion of the rail, and I know that obviously Tricia Farley Bouvier and John Barrett are as well, and Lee Davis coming on now. I'm sure she'll be in the fray, you know, trying to bring that in. Now the Berkshire Flyer is the other item for rail. We can talk about that a little bit. Now that was sort of an experimental program for a while. Is that still going? Are we expecting that to reemerge this summer, or is that done?
So as of right now, the process by which funding for what will be a fourth pilot season of the Berkshire Flyer is going through its process. It's not confirmed yet, but you know, certainly we would like to see it persist.
Yeah.
You know, we like to refer to the Berkshire Flyer as a proof of concept project, mm-hmm. right? The idea behind the Berkshire Flyer, I mean, it's one train that comes once a week and then goes back 2 days later from, you know, connecting Penn Station in New York with downtown Pittsfield. But the idea with the Flyer going all the way back to 2017, 2018, when the feasibility study for this happened, and at the time, Senator Hines was really the major champion for the Flyer.
Right.
This was one of his you know, real personal projects.
Yeah.
But the idea was, if we can establish that we will sell all the tickets in this train and people will come up here and they will have a good experience, that's a testimony that we need to expand the service. You know, mm-hmm. we shouldn't have one train. We should have a dozen trains, and they should come on different days, and they should have more flexible hours. So we like to think that in three pilot seasons, the Berkshire Flyer demonstrated a positive proof of concept. So I would hope that in the coming years, we're not just talking about, you know, restoring another year of this pilot program, yeah. but expanding it into a more viable service that brings more people to the Berkshires.
Yeah, and it has to be something regular and dependable, right? And, you know, just I recall a conversation I had last week with Bob Malnati from the Berkshire Regional Transit Authority. And, you know, some of the same concepts are there with public transportation on a bus that are there for the train. A little slightly different, but just the same idea that, you know, you're needing to get from point A to point B, and how often can you get there, and does that fit into your schedule? Can you make that work either for recreation or for your business interests? All those things, those all add up. And it seems to me the Berkshire Flyer especially mixes some of that business with tourism also, right? And that's another concern of One Berkshire.
Yeah, I mean, the Flyer is predominantly bringing visitors to the Berkshires. That's yeah. the purpose behind it, right?
Yeah.
And what, you know, and we've invested heavily in tourism in the region. You know, it has a tradition here for 150 years, naturally attracting people because of the beauty of the region. And now with all the, you know, the cultural and recreational resources that we have that bring people from around the world. But the way people get around is changing. You know, fewer people in the cities are owning vehicles.
Mm.
And as we think about, you know, how we're going to be bringing the next couple of generations of people to the Berkshires to enjoy what we have and helping us with our economy, we have to be looking at a multifaceted approach for how we get them here and then how we move them around once they are here,
yeah.
Which is another part of the transportation piece. But, you know, the visitor economy in the Berkshires is strong, but it won't just organically stay that way forever. You have to work on the pieces that make it work.
Right.
And this is one of them.
Yeah. And then the pieces connecting to the Berkshire Flyer or to other rail service as well. It's one of the things I talked to Bob Malnati about, which was, okay, that last mile, you've gotten them to the intermodal station now by rail, and how do they move on to, you know, going to their bed and breakfast or their hotel or their family's house or something like that? We don't have a lot of those pieces really, you know, well in place around here, where going the other way, heading back to New York City or to Boston, you're stepping off the train platform and you've got a lot of options, right? And a lot of ways to get yep. you where you're going.
Yeah, and that's been a challenge. You know, for the modest size of the modest volume of passengers that come up with the Flyer on a weekly basis, it's kind of worked itself out. You know, a lot of the lodging properties have been great with providing shuttles and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't really figured it out from an expansion standpoint. You know, if we go from having 50 or 100 people getting off a train to having 1,000 people getting off the train,
well,
you know, we have to have some more built infrastructure around it.
Yeah. We should have those problems, though. Those would be good problems to have, right?
Yes, right. Like that's in economic development, it's good to have a problem that's a fortunate problem to have, right? And so, yes, I'd be happy to work on that when we get there. But the built environment needs more investment and needs a little bit more creativity, which requires resources. But we are seeing some positive signs. You know, we have an uptick in rideshare services like Uber and Lyft. They're becoming more accessible in the Berkshires, especially during peak seasons, you know, May through Labor Day. So hopefully that organically continues to grow. But, BRTA has an important role, and so does our delegation and even our business community in finding additional layers to make getting around the Berkshires more accessible. And not just for visitors, but for those of us that live here as well.
Yeah. Jonathan Butler is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive. This is 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, also 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And we are glad to have Jonathan here as our guest. We're going to take that top of the hour break now, Jonathan. We always do. And make sure we thank our underwriters and give a couple of good PSAs. And we'll be back with part two of our conversation with Jonathan Butler from One Berkshire right after this. So you're listening to 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee. And we will be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
Missed an episode of your favorite show? Have no fear, because we have podcasts. Type in WTBRFM.com/podcast on your favorite browser and search for your favorite show. It's that simple.
Will you be an angel for our WTBR DJs? Every day our DJs are cold, hungry, sad, and lonely, and they are crying out for help. For only 30 cents per day, WTBR can provide them with clean studios, microphones, audio board, and much, much more. Go to WTBRFM.com and click the donate button and become a friend of WTBR. For only $8.97 per month, you can put some smiles on these faces. WTBR, for the love of radio.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is.
Deposit a portion of your everyday paycheck directly into your savings account. Set it and forget it, and watch your money grow.
When shopping, grab a basket instead of a cart to avoid impulse buys. Or even better, write a shopping list and stick to it.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Let's have a party.
Hey friends, if you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu, and from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM. Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Morning Drive show. This is Sean Sayre here with you this morning on a snowy February 6th. We have, it's coming down now, some pretty steady snow out there for sure, looking out the window. So do be careful on your ride in if you're headed in still to work today. It will be a little slippery. And then we are hearing about some freezing rain and some ice on the way. We'll do that weather forecast here in just a second to remind folks. Jonathan Butler, the president and CEO of One Berkshire, is my guest here this morning. And we'll be returning to our conversation with Jonathan in just a moment, right after we listen to the National Weather Service forecast and find out what's in store for us for the rest of the day. Here it comes.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect until 6 p.m. EST this evening. Today, snow with a slight chance of sleet this morning, then snow with sleet, freezing rain and freezing drizzle likely this afternoon. Snow may be heavy at times this morning. Total snow accumulation of 2 to 4 inches. Ice accumulation around a trace. Not as cold with highs in the lower 30s. Southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation near 100%. Wind chill values as low as 0 this morning. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A chance of freezing rain in the evening. Not as cold with lows in the lower 20s. Southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming west 15 to 20 miles per hour after midnight. Gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. Stay safe out there today and keep an eye on the weather and on the skies. Going to be a little sloppy for a little while, it sounds like, and then maybe later on this evening a little clearing. So we'll see about that. All right, welcome back to the show. Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, WSBR Lee, and welcome back to Jonathan Butler. Again, thanks, Jonathan, for joining us this morning.
Yeah, glad to be here, Sean. And during the break, I just let my dog inside, and he was covered in snow. So it's coming down pretty good in the northern Berkshires.
It certainly is. And here as well in Pittsfield. And I don't know if our neighbors in Lee, Stockbridge, and Lenox are getting a lot of this as well. I know there was going to be an sort of a mix line that I saw on some of the maps. So it looks like maybe the more northern parts of the county are going to get it a little earlier and a little heavier than the south. But we'll see. It could just coat us all. Yeah, that's just the way it works. So let's talk about One Berkshire's recent move. I know that's something that not a lot of people may be aware of, but and I know a lot of interactions that people have with One Berkshire that aren't necessarily directly at your offices, but tell us about that.
Sure. So, our organization actually owned our building in downtown Pittsfield, Central Station, the former fire department next to City Hall. We were there for about 13 years. Mm. And this past summer, we made the decision to actually sell our building and become tenants in a, you know, in a similar square footage footprint.
Wow.
And we actually, between August and January this year, we moved out of Central Station and relocated to Crawford Square on the second floor, kind of right in the middle of North Street, which we're really excited about. Our new space is about 4,500 square feet, which includes a nice brand new refurnished conference room for, you know, for use for nonprofits and the business community, a good size space that can accommodate up to 50 people. It works for both, you know, meetings of different types and also for educational sessions and things like that. We have nice retrofittable furniture. It's a nice fresh space. We were able to do a quality fit out of it. And I think what I wanted to make for a point was just that we're excited to stay in downtown Pittsfield and to be even more central in downtown Pittsfield. Our former front door was about a 100-yard walk from North Street, but now we can stand on the second floor and we have nice windows that look right out directly onto North Street. So, you know, our organization is here to help the entire region. And we do, you know, our team members are from all throughout the Berkshires and, you know, we have meetings all throughout the Berkshires on a daily basis. And, but Pittsfield is kind of it's the center of the Berkshires. It's the hub of the Berkshires. And, you know, we're excited to be right in the middle of it and able to, you know, be a resource and do the work that we do there.
Yeah. And North Street certainly is a dynamic place, not only for Pittsfield, but as you mentioned, for all of Berkshire County. It has seen its struggles and its difficulties over the years. Right now, it seems to be, doing pretty well. It's got a lot of new businesses downtown, and I would imagine One Berkshire is connected with a lot of those small businesses. That's kind of traditionally where the strength of One Berkshire has been, is those sort of small business, chamber of commerce type relationships, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, our membership has a range of different shapes and sizes. You know, we have obviously, you know, the larger businesses in the region are almost all actively engaged with us, but we have a huge footprint of small businesses.
Yeah.
You know, many located in Pittsfield and around Pittsfield. But you know, I think for us, you know, being in the middle of Pittsfield is important because, you know, we're in close proximity to the other economic centers of the Berkshires, right? Whether it be, you know, Williamstown and North Adams up to the north, or you know, Great Barrington and Stockbridge down in Lenox down to the south. This puts us in a good spot geographically. And you know, North Street is an exciting place to work. You know, as you said, you know, North Street, like any other, you know, downtown in an urban center, has had its ups and downs. But, you know, I like to, as a Berkshire native that grew up here as a kid in the 80s and 90s, you know, I like to look at where we are today versus where we are then. And it paints a pretty positive picture. You know, in the 1990s, North Street was a place that was facing a lot of adversity, and a lot went into it over the last 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, the pandemic certainly was challenging for downtowns of all types. And, you know, the city faced some adversity with that as well. But it is bouncing back. There's a lot to be encouraged by. And, you know, this administration with Mayor Pete Marchetti is doing good work to sustain that.
Yeah. And of course, economies have changed over the years, too. We think of those days of the 80s, 90s, you know, example, retail, completely different now because of the internet and because of online shopping than it was. You know, there was a lot of talk about how, you know, when the mall was coming into Lanesboro and how it didn't come down to downtown Pittsfield, that was kind of a big deal for Berkshire County. And now it doesn't seem like quite as important anymore, knowing that malls have struggles of their own, right? So businesses all go through these cycles, and they're definitely vulnerable to any kind of change like that.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect characterization of things, right? You know, 15 years ago, who would have thought we would have seen a transition from brick and mortar to digital purchasing like we have as quickly and as at the scale it is? But here we are, right? So, you know, things like the Berkshire Mall, typically when there's major economic changes, they're felt first in rural regions. Mm. So you saw the malls in more rural places close first, but now they're closing everywhere. There's hardly any malls left unless they're, you know, in massive economic centers like Boston or New York.
Yep.
But the bigger takeaway is, you know, it's how do you adjust to that, right? You know, people aren't buying their they're not buying their daily goods anymore in downtowns. You know, they're not buying their new sneakers or socks in downtowns as frequently as they used to. I think the charge to be a successful brick and mortar storefront in a downtown now is to make yourself unique, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have a niche of some type. You know, we like to say that downtowns now aren't transactional as much as they're experiential.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're going to be a coffee shop, be a unique coffee shop. Do something different that, you know, people can't get everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to provide some types of goods and services, you better differentiate yourself from what people can order on Amazon so that they have a reason to go to downtown Pittsfield or elsewhere. So we do a lot of work on that front, you know, with supporting businesses and, you know, doing educational trainings and things. And, you know, that evolution is going to be fun to watch play out in the coming years.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like the strategy that malls have taken too, right? Which is, you know, you can't just have the same mix of stores that you used to have with people, you know, just flooding in and walking around and hopefully buying something. You need to attract them there. And a lot of times it's for the experience. It's something that they're doing when they're there, not just shopping.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, you know, and there's some great businesses in all of our downtowns throughout the Berkshires that understand that. And I think are a model and they set an example for others to follow. You know, a business like Steve and Valenti's, the men's clothing store right in the middle of North Street. You know, I mean, Steve Valenti's been there a long time. They've seen a lot of different economic eras, but they're still thriving because it's an experience to go to Steve Valenti's. They provide a service that you can't get through, you know, digitally purchasing men's clothing.
Right.
And that's why their business is healthy. So, you know, whether that translates to, you know, whether you're a restaurant or you're a coffee shop or you're an art gallery or you're, you know, providing some other service to our residents in the Berkshires.
Right.
It's got to be something that's unique. And more and more businesses are getting creative about that and understanding that. And that's what's going to drive traffic in our downtowns in the future.
Well, and I think the transformation to a cultural destination as well that's happened over the last 15 to 20 years here, starting with the Roberto administration in Pittsfield, made a big difference. And obviously borrowing from what was already strong in the rest of the county. When you looked at a Stockbridge, a Lenox, a Williamstown, Great Barrington, places like that, where they had these strong cultural draws, and Pittsfield finally got a chance to share in that. And I think the, you know, that pull, bringing people again downtown and to Pittsfield, for whatever reason, you know, Wacona Park could be another anchor of that, depending on what happens with that whole project, right?
Absolutely. And I think when you look at Pittsfield's redevelopment, which really kind of catalyzed in the early 2000s, it was a focus on anchor properties, right? It was the investment in the Beacon Cinema. It was the relocation of Barrington Stage Company and the investment in Barrington Stage Company in downtown Pittsfield.
Colonial Theater.
The revitalization of the Colonial Theater. That's really the showcase piece there.
Yeah.
And even expansion and investment in the Berkshire Museum and Hancock Shaker Village, right? Like all of those pieces drove people to Pittsfield to go to those anchor properties. And that creates economic opportunity for all the small businesses that populate the downtown and make it a cool place that people can have experiences and not just go to a show in Pittsfield, but spend a day and spend a night in Pittsfield.
Right. And, you know, Milltown's reinvestment in Bosque, thinking outside the box here a little bit. Another good reason to come to Pittsfield and come to the Berkshires, stay over a winter where, you know, our strong season is the summer and maybe a little bit of the shoulder season. So, you know, bringing people here in the winter is always a good thing.
It's a great thing, and that investment was huge, and the whole Bosque investment that Milltown's made. I feel like everybody, half the people I know are going to Bosque every day to play pickleball or hit golf balls, and Bosque sport across the street. They made such a nice investment there as well.
Yep.
But you know, that's what it's about. You know, I mean, economic development in a rural region, you have to invest in your anchor properties. They have to be healthy. They have to be vibrant. They got to bring people in. And bring your own residents into the downtowns. And that's what those, you know, a number of those investments we just mentioned are doing.
Yep. And then I think of the challenges and the struggles. For example, when you get a hit like Simon's Rock College leaving Great Barrington, for example, that's got to be a difficult pill to swallow in a lot of ways, because that's a good number of jobs in the hundreds. And again, attracting people from outside the area, outside money coming in, right? Those are all things that we don't want to see happen. We don't want to lose those anchor institutions.
You really don't. You know, the Simon's Rock news was very disheartening, and it's unfortunate, right? It's going to have an economic impact down south and even beyond. You know, it certainly is displacing a lot of residents that have positions at the college. So, you know, I mean, on the surface, the first responsibility there is how do we find suitable employment for as many of those folks as possible so they can remain living here and be successful and have vibrant lives. But then that conversation pivots to what are we going to do with that space and what can be done with that space. And, you know, maybe that ends up being part of our solution for the housing piece we talked about earlier. You know, it could be a key property for that or something else. But yeah, that was difficult news, and you don't want to see that.
Yeah.
But it does happen.
Yep.
In a lot of cases, it's not necessarily about it's not about the immediate impacts. It's about what you do long term.
Right. And it's important to jump in and get active on those things, as you mentioned, right away, and say, hey, we got a problem with housing. Maybe this is a good solution, or at least a start to that. You know, I think of the GE property, you know, becoming the William Stanley Business Park. And it's been a marathon, not a sprint, on that particular property of making that economically viable again. And Pittsfield has certainly taken some serious steps toward that with the new Site 9 redevelopment, right? But again, everybody would love to see that, you know, snap your fingers and have it happen and have it work. And it just doesn't work that way in some instances.
No, some things take a very long time, you know, and the William Stanley Business Park is a good example. But again, there's some really positive things developing there. And while that's been a slow, patient process, it is one that will work in the final analysis, right? You know, one step at a time. It's been that's really a public-private partnership and requires hard work on both ends. But there's also examples of things happening quickly. You know, you think of, we were all so excited with Wayfair just 6 years ago. And obviously that ended up being a short run in Pittsfield for just about 3 years. And the pandemic played a big role in that. But all of that vacant space in the Clock Tower building in downtown Pittsfield, where the Berkshire Eagles headquarters are, was filled up to, I think they're about 90% occupancy now in that space that Wayfair had vacated.
And yeah,
that's a mix of small businesses and organizations. There's dozens of artist studios in that space. David Carver, the owner, has done some really creative, brilliant things there. So there is good stories when we have bad news.
Right.
Sometimes, you know,
right.
those losses become an opportunity and things come together quickly. So it's important to point those out as well.
Jonathan Butler is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive. He's the president and CEO of One Berkshire, and we're live here this morning from our studios on Federico Drive and also by Zoom. So glad to have you available for this today, Jonathan. Great conversation. Let's talk about a program you've got coming up with an entrepreneur program for Berkshire immigrants. Let's hear about that. What is the story behind that program?
So this is actually some state resources that we were able to procure at the tail end of the pandemic with help from the Berkshire delegation. But this is money that it's a program that we're making available to support our immigrant population, entrepreneurs in the region, women and minority owned small businesses in the region. And what we're trying to do is release some of this funding through a few different channels to provide micro grants. And basically for small business owners and entrepreneurs that are looking for, you know, financial assistance with things like business certification, you know, making yourself eligible to go after state and local public contracts, to provide translation and interpretive services for training and working with your workforce and providing resources for your workforce. And then also just different collaborations that are existing from business to business where, there might be opportunities for our immigrant population, to have access to professional opportunities, but some wraparound services are needed in order to create that environment, to support people where maybe English isn't their primary language. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make micro grants available there. That program kind of just launched in the last couple of weeks. But if anybody, has something that they're looking for funding, these are small grants. Mm. We're not giving out $50,000 and $100,000 grants, but you're talking $500 and $1,000 or maybe $2,000 grants for work that we think will be impactful. So you can reach out to our team at One Berkshire or log on to our website at oneberkshire.com and get more information. But we do a lot of things like this when funding becomes available. But this is one, focusing on a demographic in our region that we really think we need to do a better job supporting and giving easier access into the workforce in the Berkshires.
Well, and of course, the Berkshires has a fine tradition of entrepreneurial businesses from immigrants. And all we have to do is think back in our not so distant history, honestly, about folks coming into our area and starting up businesses, which ended up being very long running and trusted businesses in the area, restaurants, hardware stores, paint stores. I mean, you name it. I grew up in North County as well, North Adams and Adams. And I remember, a lot of the businesses there were all run by first or second generation immigrants from Italy, Canada, Ireland, Poland. I mean, hey, you had all kinds of, and that was the strength and the fabric of society there. And I think Pittsfield had the same very, very similar experiences in that. So I don't think it's a reach to say that supporting our immigrant population is not something that would strengthen the rest of the society here in our county.
Immigrant populations have built and really turned this country on the right path for generations and generations. And as the nation of origin or region of origin for immigrants change, it doesn't change the opportunity to have them have an impact in this region and help us evolve and grow as a region. And we have to continue to do a better job of that locally and beyond. Not trying to make it political, but we do have an immigrant population in this region that, we sometimes struggle to provide the scope of services they might be able to get in other places. And a lot of that has to do with resources or scale. But to the extent that we can start really focusing on opportunities there to do a better job, we think it's very important. And there's so much positive opportunity there. You look to downtown Pittsfield, and we've talked about a lot. And, there's a lot of immigrant owned businesses in downtown Pittsfield right now that are, they're destinations, right? They're serving, restaurants that are serving foods that are unique to the region and they're an attraction. And there's just a lot of things happening that could be supported in a stronger way. Mm-hmm. And, our organization thinks it's important to lead by example there.
Ties back to what you were talking about before about making it an experience. And those are experiences that you can't get everywhere. You can only serve burgers to so many people, and then you need something different.
Yes. So, we love the burgers, but we like the
burgers
stuff,
are okay. Don't get me wrong. It's fine, you know, but yeah, let's have something different for a change. So in the little bit of time we have left, Jonathan Butler, let's talk about the impact of tariffs. And I know there was a recent article in the Berkshire Edge that you were interviewed for, talking about the potential impact to this region with things like that. And of course, you know, these days you kind of have to follow the news pretty closely to see what the actual news is. You know, was it the thing we heard yesterday or is that different today? I don't know exactly what's going on, but there are some real challenges to that if there are tariffs, you know, added to trade to different countries, especially a couple of our larger trading partners, for example. What kind of impact will that have to our local businesses and also to our consumers around here?
Sure, Sean. You know, thanks for the opportunity to comment on this. You know, this is a topic that I think gets I don't think our 24/7 cable news does right by us as a nation in educating us on what tariffs are. And that isn't, again, that's not political. I don't care what side of the spectrum you're getting your news from. They tend to focus on the politics and not on the economics. Tariffs are a tax on exports into the U.S. You know, so ultimately, or imports into the U.S. Yeah. So ultimately, anything that we're getting from overseas, it's adding an additional cost to that in order to bring that product and capitalize in the American market on it. That cost, that tariff is collected by the federal government, and that additional cost is generally passed along to the business purchasing the product. The business then typically passes some or all of that cost onto the consumer,
making those products more expensive to consumers here in this country, essentially.
Exactly. And that concerns us as an organization and as a region on behalf of both the business and the consumer. And here's why. Inflation has already battered the American consumer market over the last 5 to 6 years, certainly in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, to the point where, you know, we had a presidential campaign that was about the price of milk and eggs, right? I mean, that was, they're not talking about it much right now, but that was what we talked about for a year in a presidential campaign. And tariffs is not something that is going to alleviate inflation or pressure on the American consumer. It's going to pass more costs down to the American consumer. Businesses in the Berkshires and even beyond that are struggling right now, you know, and we're not talking about Fortune 500 businesses that they talk about on CNN or Fox News. We're talking about, you know, businesses with 100 employees, 50 employees, 25 employees, small businesses, the ones that really make up the fabric of the country. Those businesses are being hit from two angles, right? They're dealing with inflation themselves for their own costs of doing business. And then they're dealing with diminished spending capacity by the consumers that they rely on to purchase their products.
Right.
So it's affecting businesses in two ways. It's squeezing them from both directions. And consumers are being squeezed from every direction, which is why they have less disposable income to spend. So, you know, without getting into the total dynamics of tariffs and the different ways they can be structured and the different nations they impact, in general, now is not the time to add additional cost to doing business and passing it along to the consumer in this country. If anything, we should be looking at the creative ways to reverse some of those costs and actually create more ability to spend for people. And just to highlight kind of one of the points that I made in the Berkshire Edge piece, you know, we've been talking about this in the business community for 2-3 months now because it's been a topic. And I have not had a single, you know, business owner, business executive, say anything positive about the impacts of tariffs on their business or what it will do for our region. Right. And I think that's an important narrative for us to be spreading.
Yeah. Well, and of course, it's a complicated business economics, the dismal science. And when you're talking about what, you know, a ripple can be made by one thing like that, certainly the cost of those imported products will go up. But then also any product that's competing with those imported products has a little bit of license to raise their prices too, because guess what? They can now. There's a little bit of room because the prices have gone up. So now the prices of a lot of things go up because of that. It's a very, you know, you start to mess with some of those things and you find out that you got a bigger problem that maybe, you know, you can't unravel very easily.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. You know, and a lot of these problems that have to do with costs, you know, they you know, when a business closes or a series of business closes because of a new layer of increased cost, you know, a lot of times a more urban region, a larger region can rebound from that economically somewhat quickly. In a rural region like the Berkshires, as many of us have lived and breathed throughout our lives, those moments of adversity, we're not able to bounce back as quickly. We don't have the scale.
Yeah.
You know, having concern for things like this that, you know, make us a more volatile place to live and do business should always, you know, be of concern to those of us that live here.
And we know from history that generally when there's an economic downturn of some kind or pressure on that, that the Berkshires and places like ours can feel it more deeply because of that, than maybe some of the urban centers, as you mentioned, that can bounce back a little easier. We feel it for deeper and for longer in a lot of cases. And we've all been through those cycles. Jonathan Butler, I want to say thank you very much for being here this morning, having this great conversation about everything. We didn't really get to sort of our outlook of what would be happening in 2025. Any last words you got, or people how people can get a hold of you at One Berkshire if they're looking for services from the organization?
You know, any small business owner or entrepreneur, or someone working in the economic arena some way that you know, has any interest in discussing an idea with us or getting support for something, feel free to reach out to our organization. You can log on to oneberkshire.com and see different ways to contact us. But, you know, we're here to help the business community. We're here to help the people that live here in the region. And Sean, just thanks for the time to come on and chat about these issues.
Yeah.
Maybe we can come on another day and talk a little bit about the outlook for 2025.
We can absolutely do that. I'm looking forward to it. Jonathan Butler from One Berkshire, thank you so much for being here. And folks, have a great day. Stay safe out there. Take care.